All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Welcome to the Lob and Smash podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. Here are your hosts, Wendy Olivaros and Lee Vowell.
And welcome to the Lob and Smash podcast, our second one. Hopefully this one is just as good, if not better, than the first one. I'm sure Wendy will be great, but you know, hopefully I'll be here as well. But let's start with something that we talked about not pre-pro, which is the Netflix slam, and that'll kind of lead us into our first big subject. But you watched the Netflix slam. Let me ask you, because I watched it as well, just to be jaded. I had a feeling going into watching the exhibition match, which means nothing, it's just for fun, and it was cool how they talked to people in the audience and all that, and the court looked cool and black and yada yada yada. But I had a feeling going into it, it's like, oh, this is going to go three, or it's going to go to a tie break. Each player is going to win a set, and then it's going to go to a tie break. Each set looked worthy enough for each player to win, but I just had a feeling it was going to go to the tie break because that's what is most suspenseful. If they go out there and it's 6-1, 6-1 either way, it kind of makes, you know, Netflix may not be like, hey, let's make another one of these. That first one was extremely boring. Is that just me being jaded, do you think, or did you have another different way of looking at it?
Yes, you're jaded. What kind of conspiracy theory is that?
Well, it goes back to the 80s when I watched John McEnroe play a exhibition match against Roscoe Tanner, and I'm not making that up. And I knew going in, I was like, okay, I was watching it live, you know, and I was like, well, clearly McEnroe's the better player, but he did his McEnroe thing where he gets mad and, you know, it's all for show. But I mean, it's just for fun anyway, but I mean, well, go ahead. I cut you off. But anyway, that's my reference point in saying that.
I'm a purist. I don't believe that at all. I believe two people came in with injuries. I believe they built that court and they spent very little time on the court. I believe the whole thing was kind of unfamiliar. I think both might have had a little bit of anxiety about this because this was so hyped and they both were injured coming in. So,
and they weren't getting paid anything at all. It was very little money.
Well, that's another story. But I think, I just think that they were both, and for me, I thought Alcaraz did seem to be the more tense of the two. I think it was the, I'm playing my idol, there's all these people watching. It later came out that it was the top viewed program in Spain that day. I mean, there was a lot to it that the casual tennis spectator maybe not realized what these two were dealing with.
Yeah. And one thing that it looked like, so, and as it turns out, maybe I was being jaded, because what happened at the end of the second set, because Nadal won the first set and then Alcaraz won the second set, identical scores, and almost each game a little bit was getting to be identical. But in that final game of this, I guess it was the final game, final service game anyway, for Nadal, in the second set, he wasn't doing anything with the serve. And it was just like, I think I even tweeted out, like, he's hitting it just a little bit faster than I could. And I thought it was odd because he hadn't been serving like that all match. And now that he's dropped out of Indian Wells, it looks like that's the issue, right? It's not the hip. It was something going on with the serve. So I'm wondering if he has a shoulder issue. And you may have heard something that I didn't, because I haven't seen any specifics about that. But I did see something on it about the serve. So I'm wondering if that's the issue.
Well, yesterday they were tweeting his practice session, and the serve looked very ominous. It looked better at the end of the Netflix slam than it did yesterday. And then there was speculation, well, is he warming up? What's happening? I haven't heard anything definite. There's been plenty of rumors about something with his lower back. I don't know. You know, it's all connected. So I don't know if the hip, you just don't know.
Hip bones connected to the thigh bone. Yeah, and that could be it. It's weird that we don't know specific. It's clearly not the hit because he was moving well enough in Netflix, in the Netflix slam. They both were. Alcaraz on his ankle and Nadal with his hip. And then, like I said, that service game was just, it was strange. It was really strange. I mean, the first serve wasn't doing anything. Second serve was even slower. And it was, you mentioned before we started the podcast, just emotionally how it made you feel that he withdrew, because now he's not playing until at least April at this point, right? Maybe he doesn't even really come back until 2 weeks before the French Open. But I guess he's going to come back in clay court. Maybe that's what he can. But at this point, it seems obvious this is his final year. It wouldn't surprise me if he retired after he loses or wins, if that's the case, in the Olympics. But, you know,
even estimate that he's going to make the Olympics at this point.
You don't think?
I said in the article I wrote, which I was like using as therapy because I was depressed about this, I said that if he does not play Madrid or Barcelona in April, if he doesn't play either or both of those, he's not going to play the French Open. So then you have to start to wonder, he hadn't logged any matches. How would he play the Olympics? So that's to true. Me, April's probably going to tell you what the year is. Those two, I think it's, is it Barcelona, the one he won 12 times and they renamed the trophy or something for him? If he doesn't play that, if he's not well enough to play that, he's not going to play Roland Garros.
Yeah, and even if he does, it would probably not be the result that anybody wants to see from him.
Right.
And then, of course, they play the Olympics at Roland. I guess this, besides his love, he's like Andy Murray level love for the Olympics, right? And representing this country and doing well.
Right.
But, of course, the Olympics this year are going to be held in Paris and therefore Roland Garros, which is where he's won all his French Open. So, I mean, that makes sense for him. That's what I was thinking even before this year. I was like, okay, if he comes back, he's hinted enough times this 2024 is going to be his final year. And maybe he stops playing after the Olympics because he's not going to win the U.S. Open. He's just not. You know, it's hard court, get to be a hard court season. He's just not. I know that people talk about, you know, he's one of the big three. Maybe he's the greatest. He's not the greatest to me because he's a great player. He may be one of the top three players, but he's not as versatile as Djokovic or Federer on those courts. He's more of a clay court guy who has won on hard courts, but he doesn't win consistently as well as they did. To me, they're the better players overall. And people can debate that. That's just my opinion. But I think that was my hope, is that he was going to come back this year and then play the French Open. I didn't know what he was going to do before that, because he had more success in his first tournament when he won. What, he got to the third match, right? Third or fourth match, and then had the hip issue and then had to drop out. But my hope was he would play in the Olympics, just because it was on clay, and clay's not as hard on the body. So I'm thinking he's just, but I guess I was shocked that he dropped out so late. I'm wondering how Indian Wells people feel. I mean, maybe it was fine, but if you're an Indian Wells official, how do you feel? You know? So
you feel like he was trying to make it go, and he was playing tonight. It was always known that he was playing on Thursday night. So,
yeah, but just before this, just before the start of the event. And maybe that's it. Again, maybe I'm just being jaded, but it's like, well, you just played in the Netflix slam. You looked okay there and you don't want to come back. I don't know. Cause he makes all those millions of dollars from the Netflix slam. What's he going to make from Indian Wells? Cause he's not going to run the event.
Felt that the Netflix slam was like the training wheels on the bike to see what he could do.
Yeah.
I thought it was timed in a way that it could help him see, like, in a short match snapshot, what could he do? How would he recover before you get into a week and a half tournament that somehow is in the desert and is already behind with rain delays where you might not have the rest. So I don't know. I'm not jaded. I don't think he's an auto add to the Olympics just because of his reputation, because don't you have to qualify? Like last night they were talking about the U.S. players, and maybe different countries have different rules, but they were talking about the U.S. women who, if you right now had to pick the Olympic team, it would be Coco Gauff, Jessie Pegula, Madison Keys, who hasn't played for a while, and Emma Navarro, because you would play it based on rank and points.
Yeah, and partly they have to have played in the Davis Cup and or Billie Jean King or Billie Jean King Cup as well. Like, that's the reason the Russian and Belarusian players like Sabalenka, now that the International Tennis Federation has said, yeah, they can play, but then there's the catch 22 of, well, can they? Because they haven't played in either, because the rule says you have to represent your country in international competition before leading up to the Olympics, and they haven't been able to do that because they're not allowed in those events.
Right.
So I don't know. That's a good question, because I don't know if with Nadal or any player, if they haven't played Davis Cup, for instance, and there's, you know, maybe there's a rule where if their country is involved, they could still be like a wild card kind of for their country. That's a good question. But surely, yeah, I don't know.
You have the same situation with who I would think would be a good mixed doubles team based on what I saw in Eisenhower Cup, Wozniacki and Holger Rune. They played well together. And she has said from the beginning she wants to play the Olympics, but will she be eligible? I mean, she hasn't. Her comeback has been probably slower than she thought it would be. It seems like everybody's comeback is slow. And that's why we need to talk about Simona Halep soon.
So let's talk about Osaka. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, let's go ahead and talk about Halep. We don't really know when she's officially returning, correct? Go ahead.
I mean, there's problems. The ruling is great. I'm a Halep fan. I never felt like I felt like she was being treated harshly. I don't understand the delays, why this couldn't have been resolved, why she lost all this time. However, she's now not ranked. She, you know, wild cards to tournaments aren't like that automatic, because think of all the women that are trying to get them, all these women trying to come back. You know, and who's she going to coach? Who's going to be on our team? You're in the middle of the year trying, and maybe she's been working on the team in the back. We don't know.
I don't know. I just keep an eye on Rune, whoever he's discarded recently. No, I'm just kidding. So.
I thought maybe Tom Hill, because Sakari, but whatever, you never know, because it's a carousel. But the thing is, she's in theory ready to play, but all of those issues are still in hand. The WTA, they don't act, well, I don't know how I want to put this,
in the best interest of the sport.
Okay, that too. But they don't seem to be like on the forefront of taking care of their players. But the fact is, her suspension would have ended in July. She would have been within the top 100, probably the top 60. I think she was out of the top 50. So now she's not ranked. But if everything would have been taken care of in a timely manner, she would have been coming back as in the top 60, 70. That's a lot different than where she is now. Are they going to do something about that? I don't know.
Yeah, probably not. Because, I mean, you still run the risk, even though I don't think you or I think she intentionally took anything, right?
I don't think she did at all.
Yeah. So, I mean, we kind of defend her. But there's going to be players out there that still are thinking she did it intentionally. So the WTA, and for right or wrong, I'm not judging either way, but the WTA might also have to weigh that issue with the fact that, you know, okay, well, she was innocent. I mean, that's the organization saying that, and they kind of have to weigh how their organization feels about it. So it could be, and I know they aren't always they're not in charge of giving the wild cards. That's up to the tournaments, right?
Right.
But as
the
far
ranking.
As right, but as far as the ranking, I don't see, because then you're saying, okay, Halep should have this ranking as opposed to this other player who may not have been suspended. And then you run the risk of causing issues. So I kind of see it either way. But I agree. I mean, it's a weird time of year, but as you mentioned, you used a great word for it, which is carousel, because that's what the coaching carousel is, right? There'll be coaches to pick. I mean, it'd be funny to see Nick Kyrgios. Hey, I'll coach her. You know, and just that would be awesome. Just to see, that won't happen, but it would be funny to see, because I think they would work well together, first of all. But But I think there are coaches out there that she can pick up. She's not going to go back to Patrick, that's for sure. I don't even know right. why he's able to still keep coaching.
I'm surprised. But, and you know, she had such a good relationship with Darren Cahill, but he's not going to leave center's side right now.
No, I hope. I mean, yeah, exactly. I don't know who would at this point.
Right.
Like, do I want to coach center or do I want to coach Djokovic? You know, it's like, I think I'll, no offense to Djokovic, but, you know, center is the best player in tennis right now.
And he's young and he's ascending.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, great word, ascending, because he hasn't lost this year and he still could be getting better, which has to be scary for especially Carlos Alcaraz. But yeah, getting back to Halep, we both agree that we're glad her suspension or ban, whatever you want to call it, was reduced to 9 months time served. She's available to play right away. It's definitely, there's the tennis, or you see it from our views at Lob and Smash, lobandsmash.com. I mean, people are highly interested in her, and it's not just because of the ban. She's just one of those personalities that draws fans to tennis. So it's great that she's coming back. It's good for the sport that she's coming back. I just don't know. I mean, she's not young. She's not as old as she was going to be within the ban if the ban had continued, but she's still not young. So I don't really know what we would have expected anyway, even if it had been 3 months, because it's not like she was playing a high level of tennis right before she served. So I don't know. I'm glad she's coming back first and foremost. I just don't know what to expect from her comeback.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
Well, we don't even know when she's coming. There's this rumor exactly. that Miami was giving her a wild card, but maybe not. Maybe they just want her to come. I don't know what to make of that. Did you see that? That's like Twitter.
I haven't seen that.
Twitter chatter that she got some communication from them, but either it's a wild card or it's not. I don't know what the wiggle room is. So.
Yeah,
and speaking
fast.
Of wiggle room, her case is going to create some for players behind her. You know, I don't exactly remember what Sharapova's issue was when she was suspended, but I do feel like it was something that she was not aware she took. I think her team was, I don't remember, but this is the first time that I see with a high profile player that they're saying it appears to have been an inadvertent ingestion.
Intake,
of it.
Right.
So what's that mean for players down the line? Because this whole doping thing, even with lesser known players, has been messy and slow. And I don't know. It just seems like there's so many governing bodies. It's very confusing.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, just the names of the courts alone are kind of confusing. But yeah, it's more the slowness to me that you mentioned. It's, you know, if somebody's like, okay, well, we're going to suspend provisional suspension. That's what we're going to start with, right? And then 8 months down the road is when you'll have, it's kind of unfair to the player. It does need to be a sped up process. That's one, you know, Djokovic's organization that he has, it has nothing to do with the WTA and ATP. That's what his organization is trying to do, is try to streamline all the issues like drug suspensions that happen in tennis, because they don't make sense to the player. They certainly don't make sense to the fans, who are really, right. you know, we're pretty important because we pay all the bills, right?
Right.
So if it doesn't make sense to the players, it's certainly not going to make sense to us. And that's going to lose tennis fans, because it's like, I don't know why this player suspended. It doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, other sports, it's, you know, players get suspended more rarely, I guess, or it's obvious when they do. But in tennis, it just doesn't make sense. It's like, okay, you're guilty until you can prove your innocence. Basically down, which is what happened with Halep, right? I mean, she was suspended, and then
yes.
it's like, then it's like, why didn't they just wait and talk to the coach who admitted that, okay, I gave her some collagen and that probably had the banned substance in it, instead of you're suspended and then we'll deal with everything. It's just, that's very unfair. I mean, what's tennis gaining from her to keep playing? she's getting points and money, she's going to do that at the back end anyway. Maybe she deserves to keep doing that, or anyone right. does.
But I know this isn't like a parallel exactly, but they sure got Rublev's points and stuff back from his issue. Like, how did that get resolved that fast?
I think there was so much of an outcry about that. I'm glad you brought that up because I didn't have that on the list to talk about. And the same thing happened with, well, Arthur Fiese had the same issue, but nothing happened to him. You know, he didn't get a point deducted. He didn't get disqualified. It was just, I don't know if you saw that whole thing.
Yes.
He's playing on this really bad court. And he was right in what he said. But it was the same situation. I mean, he's screaming at people as well and cussing. And we didn't really see that from Rublev. We saw him scream and be way over the top and, you know, go beyond what he should have done. But there was no point deduction. There was nothing. It was just like, you're disqualified because this line judge, who had nothing to do with the line judge you were yelling at, thought he heard this. So therefore, you're disqualified. So the whole thing was unfair. So there's all this hubbub about, okay, you know, maybe that was it. Maybe so many people got behind Rublev, not saying that the way he acted was correct, because it wasn't, right? You shouldn't.
No, it was over the top. Like, but I was surprised at how abruptly it was over. Then he got the point. He was wrong. He was very wrong. He's a likable guy. He just needs to, he's young. He needs to dial that back a little bit. I don't know if a warning or a point or something would have been enough to like pull him back in that moment when he was.
Well,
really
he had calmed down. And when they came over and told him he was disqualified, even Bublik was confused. Like, what is going on here? I mean, he had calmed down to the point of when they came over and said, you've been disqualified. He was like, what are you talking about? So he had calmed down, but I agree. I mean, you can't do that. And if he had a point deducted in that case, it still would have maybe changed the outcome. Cause he was, the other part is he was correct in what he was arguing.
Yes.
Maybe that's part of it too.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, he does. There was somebody they were talking to. I can't remember. It was a female player. And she was like, yeah, every time we go out, he is the kind of guy where like, you're not paying for anything. Like, he's going to pay for it all. He's like one of the nicest people on tour. But then he gets onto the court sometimes, and it's just like, if you don't know anything about tennis or Andrei Rublev, you think the guy's a madman.
Right.
But I just hate it for him, because usually he took it out on that photographer one time and last year, and then, you know, this. He does sometimes go over the top. It's usually inwardly directed, though, which kind of makes me feel bad for him. But, yeah, I mean, he's got issues that he needs to deal with. It's just kind of a shame. But yeah, you know, the other part of that too could just be it's the ATP versus the WTA. And we're talking about two different organizations. As you mentioned, WTA is behind. I mean, even the electronic lines call it. ATP is doing that next year. WTA is like, who knows when? It's like, that's not, I just put it in place. You already have the technology. It doesn't make any sense.
I don't know why they don't have it now. I don't know what the delay is. The technology is there. That's a whole other thing. You know, I used to think that NFL officiating was, well, I still think it's questionable.
But lately,
tennis officiating is, it shouldn't be that subjective. It's lines. It is what it is.
Right. Yeah, I agree. They still have better eyes than I do. I mean, some of the stuff they call that's like borderline, it's like, oh, it's out. And then it goes to review and it's like, oh, that is out. Like, I would have never seen that. But yeah, they just needed to, as lots of people have pointed out, the technology is there. At least the ATP is implementing it next year. So we won't have any of these issues unless it's the French Open, but they supposedly can see the ball where it landed, because it won't have the electronic line review.
Oh, but those marks, that's its own clown show. There's 15 marks and you point to one.
That
the one, or was that two points ago?
Exactly. Yeah, the French Open's not going with it, though, because that's their argument. You can see where the ball hits in the clay, and maybe other clay courts. But I just wish the WTA would do the same thing in their tournaments. It's like, it doesn't make any sense not to. It's all there. Yeah, maybe it's an added cost, but it's not like the WTA is not making money. I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
The WTA can't decide what they're doing with the finals. So I guess surprised that they cannot make these? That's a standing event year over year that they can't seem to plan.
Yeah. Speaking of money and the WTA finals, it's time to, I guess, talk about PIF and Saudi Arabian money into this sport. So I'm really interested in your thoughts on what do you see? How do you feel about, I don't know if you like golf. I'm not a golf fan, but I do know they disrupted the way professional golf was handled as a business. So what's your take on potential Saudi Arabian interest in tennis?
I have mixed feelings about it. I guess it hasn't progressed enough for me to have a strong opinion one way or the other. Golf, thankfully, I don't think it's going to be the mess that golf is, because the fact that golf has its own, like it broke off its own, a different tour for this, makes it all the worse. Hopefully that never happens with tennis. I don't know. Like, the whole thing is, I guess they're going to be like the main sponsors of some of the U.S. tournaments and some of the key tournaments. And it didn't take them long to take down Pepperstone on the rankings and put PIF. Like, that was like a 5-minute thing afterwards.
Exactly.
I don't know. I don't know if it's good or bad. I know the WTA, it's a little more sensitive because there are human rights issues with women in Saudi Arabia, and everybody's all over the board on that. I mean, you got Anj Jabeur, who has a strong opinion that you might not expect from her, given her background. And then you have Chris Evert, Martina Navratilova, other people with different opinions. So the ATP doing it was probably the easier of the two. I don't know what the WTA is going to do. And they act like they don't have money. So maybe they need to, but maybe that's the wrong place to look. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, even on the men's side, you've got the, you know, Kyrgios doesn't have an issue with it, but Andy Murray does. So it's, and I can, it's all political, basically, and human rights, which is what you, said. So I can kind of see it both ways, too. But, you know, with their playing in Dubai, it's the same issue.
True.
I guess the problem is that once you welcome in that Saudi Arabian money from their public investment fund, and it could be billions of dollars, then you're talking about, just as you mentioned, I mean, it didn't take them long at all. I mean, I was looking at the rankings and it was like PIF. I was like, I thought the same thing. I was like, well, that was fast. But you know, money speaks and money controls. So if you have so much money being invested by one country into the sport, there's going to be, you know, you run the risk of them starting to have some control or even a split eventually down the road. Golf was easier just because I think there's, no offense to golfers, but when you get the high end, you have a lot more individual egos, I guess, involved. Where tennis, you still have egos, but there's still a collection there. You know, and you have, I know there's some nationality with golf as well, but it's much more so in tennis because you have lots of different events where there's not just one, but you have lots of different events where people are playing for their country and they feel strongly and about that. But there's so many crossover events too, so it kind of takes that away a little bit in tennis. But yeah, I mean, it's, you start, eventually they're going to, money speaks. People are going to take the money. So eventually Saudi Arabia is, if they want to continue down the road of getting heavily involved in tennis, it's going to happen.
That's our podcast for this week. You can read all of our stuff at lobandsmash.com. Thanks for listening.
I don't know how you guys live with yourselves.
One day at a time.
One day at a time.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.